Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our second On the Time Lash Extra, focusing on Series 9. And we've got the second part of the Series 9 premiere. Mark and I are going to be talking about The Witch's Familiar. Hiya, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm good. We should say for listeners that Mark and I are not in the same room. We're doing this not over Skype. We're doing this old-fashioned earphone in the phone talking over our mobiles. So, and then Mark will seamlessly edit the two sides of the conversation together, so it does seem like we're in the same room.
Indeed it will. The magic of radio.
Yes. But yeah, okay. Which is familiar. It was excellent, wasn't it? It was absolutely stunning.
It was, yeah. There's so many just jaw-droppingly brilliant moments in it that, we will discuss.
I think it's fair to say that there was there has been a lot of commentary on the internet. Fandom was really, Twitter particularly, really trying to pull apart this episode. Seemingly thinking, or just looking for some sort of evidence that Stephen Moffat is, out of ideas, that he's, running on empty. Mm-hmm. But in The Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar, there's just stuff in here unlike you have ever seen, not just on televised Doctor Who, but unlike anything you've ever seen in any other Doctor Who, like audios, spin-off novels, anything like that. It's just, it was a very unique, particularly the second episode, very unique show.
Yeah. I mean, certainly. I mean, I love the fact that it has the kind of faith in the audience to just spend so much time just focused on the Doctor and Davros talking.
Yeah.
Just two old men discussing sort of morality and their sort of various battles that they've had in the past. It was amazing.
Yeah, and you are right. There was an awful lot of giving the audience credit in this. Davros was obviously the main one because, I mean, I think Davros is as familiar, maybe a little less so, but as familiar as the Daleks. But this is the first time in the new series since 2005 that we really get an idea of who Davros is, because he was kind of a little bit of background dressing when it was the Stolen Earth. Mm-hmm. What's the second part of that called?
Journey's End.
Because he's in that, and he's the baddie in that, but he's, he's also surrounded by a colossal Dalek plan and literally everyone who's ever appeared in Doctor Who as well, so... So you don't really get a sense of Davros as the big bad in that. I mean, we're on series 4 in the normal On the Time Lash run, so we'll be spending a bit more time with that episode.
Certainly,
maybe
yeah.
In half a year's time or so. But very much the Daleks, the Cybermen, the Master were all very much the focuses of their particular season finales, where Davros was kind of lost in the foam of the party. for that series 4. So this is the first time that audiences are certainly going to be familiar with Davros, but this is really, really giving, fleshing out the Davros character. The most fleshing out that he's had since Genesis of the Daleks in the 1970s, which is essentially the basis.
I mean, quite possibly, because, I mean, Michael Wisher is sort of the great performance, and then, Terry Molloy, as good as he is at what he does, it's kind of Davros as a kind of ranting Hitler figure.
Yeah,
whereas what
yeah.
we get with Julian Bleach in The Witch's Familiar is he's an old man who's dying and is kind of questioning what he's done in his life and whether or not he's made the right decision.
In a way, it was kind of like, considering that we also have the Master in this episode, mm-hmm. in terms of looking at what Davros is actually saying, I mean, it's... There is a major performance. There's a lot of... Julian Bleach is an excellent actor, but the character of Davros seems to be going out of his way to... I mean, how much of that is truth? How much of
is
fiction? How much of it is genuine sentiment? How much of it is acting on the part of Davros? What is the truth? If there was any truth in anything that he said to the Doctor, I mean, it was revealed that it was a plan by Davros, but it was the most meticulously planned scheme, more so than anything we've encountered with the Master in the 80s.
Yes.
That it relies on the Doctor, the Davros pretending to be dead, the Daleks going along with the lie, the Doctor hiding out for a bit, but eventually Davros relying on the character of the Doctor that if he asks, he would come and see him on, in his death chair, essentially. and then getting him into a particular room and then having do a particular thing, i.e. give up some regeneration energy, have him stand at a particular place while his snake security guard is masquerading as, pipes or wiring that leads down to the heartbeat of Skaro. It's absolutely staggering.
Yes, it is the most, I don't want to say convoluted, but yeah, you're right, meticulously planned scheme Davros has ever had.
If we were being uncharitable, you could say that an awful lot of this was convoluted. Davros's plan, as we just said. I'm still not quite sure about the ending, what actually happened. So the regeneration energy was kind of pumped into every Dalek. Why were the remains of the Daleks in the sewers rebelling?
It's funny you should mention that, because a lot of people kind of have used words like deus ex machina, which makes no sense, because the resolution to the plot is clearly signposted all the way through in the script.
Yeah.
It's not as if he just plucks a thing out of the air and goes, oh, okay. I think essentially what happens is that the regeneration energy starts to regenerate the sort of dead Daleks in the sewer, so that they start to kind of basically rise back up again to retake their place, and there's not enough room for everybody, I think, is kind of how, that's how I kind of understood
it. But there's, at the end, when the Doctor and Clara are running back through the Dalek control room to find the TARDIS, and they run past a Dalek, and it seems to have a lot of brown liquid pouring out of its dome.
Uh-huh. That's a horrible sentence, signify. Isn't it? you want to see a Doctor about that? That's...
Well, it's exactly at the moment where the Doctor says that your sewers are revolting. Yes. It's so what's happening? Are they kind of like, is it kind of seeping through the floor and trying to get back into like a Dalek casing?
That's what I kind of figured, because obviously there's that line that Missy has, which is kind of drowned out by the Dalek sort of screaming, mm-hmm. where she says, they want to get their hands on your motor or something like that. So I assume that is what's happening.
Okay. I mean, the nuts and bolts of it are what I have a problem with. I mean, like, the idea, I get it. Like, the very surface of Skaro itself has become alive again, or has become re-energised, is the best way to say it. That is a truly horrible thought. Daleks never die.
Yeah.
They just literally form into, like, the kind of the screaming bedrock of the planet that the Dalek buildings are constructed
on. It is quite horrible.
Particularly when the Master pokes a bit of the wall and it just this screaming Dalek. You know, it was living up to its remit to scare. This episode certainly. As well. There's a overt, I mean, you know, like these two episodes, there's been a lot of overt spectacle. Mm-hmm. But there's also been such horrifying ideas and, just like psychological horrors.
Yeah, there has.
They've been part of this first.
But do you know what I absolutely love about The Witch's Familiar is that there is so much sort of bleakness, and there is so much horror, and there is so much kind of quiet, measured discussion happening, that the jokes in it just sail, because they just like this kind of great sort of relief of tension. Like I absolutely adore the joke where the Doctor wakes up after he's nicked Davros's chair, and let's face it, the 12th Doctor is the only one that can get away with nicking somebody's wheelchair and then doing a bunch of jokes about it.
And then cutting to, well, I mean, we don't see the actual theft happening, but he's literally pulled a man with no legs out of a chair and not even made him comfortable. I don't know, propped him up against the wall.
Yeah, just flung him on the floor.
There was some sort of... Yeah, he just flung him on the floor so that he's flailing about.
But yeah, so we've had that bit, and then the Doctor wakes up, and then Davros has this kind of very kind of, you know, does it please you, you should feel honoured. It took quite some procurement, but, you know, we finally managed to get it. The only other chair in Skaro. I howled with laughter. And howled with laughter again on the second viewing. It's such a perfectly written joke.
I love what that also seems to signify as well, which is because, you know, from the original Dalek serial and from Genesis, we know that the Khaleds and the Thals were, humanoid. They were bipedal. So at some point there has been, and presumably they weren't, like, you know, like when the atomic bombs were dropped, they didn't disintegrate all chairs and left everything else. At some point, there has been a concerted Khaled Dalek attempt to destroy all chairs on Skaro. Not just like pile them up in a warehouse somewhere, or you know, whatever. I don't know. Just move them aside, and you don't think about it again. But like an actual, you know, like kind of like the book burning rallies in like 1930s Germany or something. There's been a concerted attempt to destroy all chairs, bar one. Should Davros ever have a guest? It's I absolutely love that idea.
It is brilliant. Yeah.
But yeah, you are right. I mean, the humour in this is I mean, there's some great jokes and stuff. You know, just in terms of humorous performances, I think that Michelle Gomez is incredible.
One of my favourite bits of her is where she's kind of just dancing to this cacophony of like Dalek voices, just in time with the sort of rising and falling of the. It's great. Like, I mean, that's clearly just I think improvisation on her part.
And it's absolutely stunning. I mean, there's so much that she does that you just can't conceive of somebody meticulous. I mean, Stephen Moffat is a great writer, but I mean, there's got to be a lot of stuff that's just purely her. Yeah. I absolutely love when they have taken the Dalek mutant out of the casing and she just shoots the look at Clara and says, get in. And it's worth them cutting away and then cutting back to her as well, where she just gives this steely, sinister look. Like, you know, get in of your own volition or I'm going to put you in there. It's
the cliffhanger resolution, which is a cop-out, but they go into so much detail and sort of properly do it, you know, to explain to the audience how it happened, that it never actually feels like one.
Yeah. Do you know the only bit I don't really like about that, and that was a great opening, is that even very, very briefly, the guy playing the fourth Doctor looks nothing like Tom Baker. And I don't want to say the guy they've got playing William Hartnell, because was it a four-year-old child? I mean, how small was the first Doctor, and you could barely see him? And also, how sinister as well. And do you follow Clayton Hickman? Former editor of Doctor Who magazine claimed that Clayton Hickman it's just his Twitter feed after that episode was all full of stuff like, can't sleep, the tiny Hartnell Doctor will come and eat me in my sleep.
The tiny Hartnell, I think can't he called sleep. It, wasn't it?
yeah, exactly. Because it looked more like John Culshaw as the fourth Doctor, and it did not look like it was actually the first Doctor sneaking by.
But I agree. But it was still a great sequence.
It was, but I think they should have started with
Capaldi, perhaps.
Yeah. I think in terms of the name of the Doctor, there was a lot of that kind of brief suggestions of other Doctors in the background in that episode, and that worked. I don't think it quite worked in this one. Because it just didn't look like the actual actors. That kind of thing of at the last moment disappearing has been, not necessarily in Doctor Who, but they do it a lot of times in Star Trek, using the transporter to make it like, you know, look like they're creating miracles to baffle primitive peoples. But it was good. It was a good cliffhanger, and it was a great resolution because they actually took time to really not just in a couple of lines rattle off an explanation, but actually give you a little mini episode within a larger.
But then also, the Doctor doesn't know until pretty much the end of the story that Clara's okay. So then that does add to this danger, because he's got nothing left to lose, which is why he flings a wheelchair-bound man on the floor and nicks his chair. And that scene was just amazing. Just when the door opens and it's Capaldi in Davros's chair, I was just like, I can't believe they're doing this. This is amazing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the whole thing was great. We've discussed again the minor points of the plot seeming a little convoluted, but the weight of just the jokes and the drama and the acting, they're the major thing. Julian Bleach's Davros was, I can't accurately say how stunning. I mean, you know, when he was in Stolen at Journey's End, we knew that we had a really good Davros, you know. And he was in a Torchwood as well, wasn't he?
He's been in
the
Torchwood,
well,
he's been in the Sarah Jane Adventures as well, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and he's always turned out these sterling performances, but this was just above and beyond the Call of Duty. Particularly when Davros is in his eyes. And
I'm not too sure about that. The whole opening of the eyes thing. I get it. I get why he does it. But then, to me, Davros's eyes have never been there. They've always been like burnt out or like sort of scratched out or something like that. So then for him to sort of open them, I was like, oh, right, okay. So they work? He just doesn't like to use them?
No, I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, when you open up a Dalek, it's got an eye, but it's just chosen to rely on or to use technology because it's better, or at least the technology that they've designed is better. So he's using his little blue eye, which doesn't he can't it can also shoot lasers as well. Not in this episode, but wasn't it like Destiny of the Daleks or something like that? It can shoot lasers. He's just chosen to use that, just in the same way that inside an actual Dalek there's a creature with an eye, but they choose to use the superior technology of the eye stock. which when you think about that sentence, you just think, no, that doesn't work. No, I thought it was great. I enjoyed it for the emotional punch that it had. I mean, I know what you mean. I mean, I saw some people on Twitter and Facebook kind of saying the same thing, going, oh, so Davros has always had eyes, has he? Well, I'm not going to be watching next week. Like, as if Davros's eyes is the new jump the shark.
Yeah. Kids watching Doctor Who now, we'd never met Davros before.
Well, is it worth talking about that then? Because there has been, with these two episodes, a lot of, you know, a lot of chat about how Doctor Who seems to be regressing to a point in the 80s where it's really intricately dealing with its own mythology, possibly alienating casual viewers. And I disagree as well, but we also do have the lowest ratings that Doctor Who's ever got.
If you actually look at the consolidated ratings for Magician's Apprentice are relatively similar to what it's been in the past, so about sort of 7.8 million or something like that. And also Saturday England were playing Wales at the rugby, so that's most of the country watching something else.
Yeah, I mean, it should be said that in terms of what's on television as well, is that like viewing numbers are down across the board. So people are saying, oh, Doctor Who's only got 3 million, but it's still one of the most watched programmes on that day in that week. You know, like Downton Abbey has just premiered as well, the final series of Downton Abbey, and that was considerably down.
People think, and you know, the press and people that want to sort of remove Stephen Moffat from his job are kind of just very simplistically taking the ratings from 2015 and trying to compare them with ratings from 2007, 2000, you know, pre-iPlayer, and think that you can just get away with that and go, oh, it's failing. And not take into account that the way people watch television has vastly, vastly changed. I watched The Magician's Apprentice for a third time on my phone on the bus back from London.
So they're saying that the ratings for these episodes are low, but actually the iPlayer access, what would you call it, records, are incredibly high. I think The Magician's Apprentice in the week following its broadcast had something like 1.5 million accesses, which is absolutely staggering. So that's a whole, I mean, you know, maybe it could be 500,000 people watching it twice.
But I think a lot of genre show audiences are, you know, much more sort of comfortable with watching. I think also with it being two-parters this year, there's maybe a small fraction of people that are wanting to watch it as a two-parter.
Yeah, well, we're storing up, so it's a big movie event every
you know,
2 weeks.
There's maybe that's happening as well. There's so many different things that I think, you know, the sort of ratings panic that happens every year with Doctor Who, it doesn't really hold much water when you actually look at the numbers.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I just introduced it so we could begin talking about it, because there is a lot of distracting negative chat going on. Not focusing on the episodes, but seemingly just trying. A lot of Doctor Who fans just trying to dig the programme's grave. And as I said to
somebody on Twitter, I think it was last week after The Magician's Apprentice, and I said, well, you know, 30 years since the hiatus, we might as well celebrate it in style. with fans trying to dig the show its own grave.
But yeah, I mean, like, there is no sense that Stephen Moffat is out of ideas. Going back to the idea, do you think it was kind of too much embedded in its own mythology?
I mean, I think there's enough in The Magician's Apprentice to go, for people who've never met Davros before, to go, oh, Davros is a very bad person.
All you got to do is just include a line, which it was, include a line of dialogue saying Davros is the creator of the Daleks, and then anybody who's bothering their ass to listen will surely be on board with what's about to unfold. you know, I mean, like, I think, you know, the Daleks are iconic, but I think Davros's design is incredibly iconic as well. I think it's absolutely horrifying, but I just love the way that Davros looks as well. And they've really, you know, with the Julian Bleach incarnation, they've really amped up the body horror.
Especially with him removed from the chair, which we've never really seen before. We've seen his head.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, now we know that he doesn't. He doesn't move around by just, you know, lightly tiptoeing in the skirt of the chair.
There's no pedals in the chair.
It doesn't matter how much David Gooderson and Destiny of the Daleks tried to make us think that he had legs beneath the skirt to move the thing around. It's not the case. Davros doesn't have legs. That was a great line as well. You know, he's a great inventor, but you know, he just doesn't invent himself a pair of legs. That's Do you know what's also great as well? And I hope they do it every fortnight, having a Sunday feature-length omnibus of the episodes. I would love that to happen.
Yeah, it would be good if we get that every second week, because it was very. I mean, I didn't watch it on Sunday afternoon; I was out, but I recorded it and sat down and watched it on Monday, and it was great fun.
Yeah.
It was a proper Doctor Who movie.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah. I mean, they still. I thought they were just going to have it as one long movie, but they did infuriatingly have a little kind of divider. Well, not infuriating. What am I talking about? Why did that anger me in any fucking way?
Yes, perhaps.
Irksome,
perhaps.
Maybe. It would have been like if it just kind of ran on. That'd be perfect. Because they then removed the titles from the from the Witch's Familiar. Oh, that was a great scene as well. I know it was the Master explaining how the Doctor got away from those robots, but just Clara hanging upside down. With like this kind of like byplay about making a pointed stick, I thought was really funny as well. And I think there's going to be like a whole industry of T-shirts now which just have the lines on it. No, of course not. He's the Doctor. He fell into a pit of vampire monkeys. Or something. I think that was a.
But
was
I mean, I would happily. I hope when Jenna Coleman leaves, it's to join Michelle Gomez in a spin-off series in which the two of them just bicker across all of time and space.
Well, now here's the thing. I mean, there has also been a bit of chat online about was Clara the Witch's Familiar? Was
she
the Magician's Apprentice?
And all this kind of thing.
What do these titles actually mean?
I mean, for me, I thought it just tied back to the medieval faffing about in the first episode. And that to sort of protect the Davros and Dalek stuff coming out early, they kind of just went, oh, that's what we're going to call it. Because remember, that title was announced, like, at Christmas. So, you know, you couldn't have you know, the Doctor and Clara return in Mercy of the Daleks or something like that. Shall we just do a quick wrap-up of sort of favourite scenes, favourite performances? Capaldi in Davros's chair threatening the Daleks with a gun. Because I'll tell you now, yeah, fine, he doesn't like weapons, but there is always a little thrill when you see the Doctor holding a gun. Just a little bit, because you don't see it very often, and you're like, oh, God.
You are right. There's a jarring sensation when you see stuff like that. You know that there's some real turmoil in there when that comes.
So, I really like that one.
It must have gone on for about 9 minutes or something. It's a fairly long scene, and it's mostly made up of close-ups of Davros's face and Capaldi's face, but I just love the kind of head-to-head that the Doctor and Davros have. The one that ends with them both chuckling to each other, because Capaldi and Bleach as actors are excellent. Also, but they're excellent at playing characters who are also acting as well. You believe the Doctor is taken in by it, but he isn't for a minute. And Davros is putting his back into, really knocking
Davros
down the
Doctor's
guard.
Davros is so convincing that I saw one internet commenter going, Davros showing compassion. What next bit of canon are you going to take a shit on? And I was like, did you not watch it all the way through? When it turned out that it was all a lie?
Favourite performance is 100% is Julian Bleach. I mean, nobody's doing any bad work here. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Nicholas Briggs as the voice of the Daleks is this the most Daleks that we've seen
possibly
on screen?
Yeah, possibly
the most amount of Dalek voices or individual Dalek. Maybe the Parliament in Asylum for the Daleks. I don't know. Here's the thing, though. In the Supreme Daleks control room, what is the function of all these other Daleks? Because there's no technology around the walls for them to be getting on with any biz. Every time the camera cuts back to the control room, they're kind of just floating around. It's like a rapper's entourage. Like, it's just a lot of people hanging around in the room with no obvious employment. And they all look great. I mean, why does the Supreme need a special weapons Dalek? Surely that's the most secure room on Skaro. Why does he need... Without the special weapons Dalek in there?
Just cause. Still hasn't done anything, that bloody special weapons Dalek.
You know, again, what is the point of that? It's absolutely brilliant seeing loads of different types of Daleks from all... And you're right, Stephen Moffat in an interview said, what do you do if you put... an original Hartnell Dalek next to a Russell T. Davis era Dalek. How does it look? He went, they just look fine. There's no problem. They all look like Daleks. They all look great. And they do. They look excellent. Again, Paradigm Daleks, where are they? Have they been completely forgotten about? Exterminated? Were they thrown on top of the chair bonfire on Skaro? It was just chairs and any paradigmy looking Daleks. Just
I think what happened was Davros came back, you know, after he's escaped from Journey's End. It's taken him a little while. He's got back. He's seen these paradigm Daleks. He goes, "What the fuck is this? What's this? What's all these colours? What? You look like you're made out of plastic." No. Get in the bin.
Get in the bin. Well, that seems like a decent place to leave it. join us next week again for what's the next one called? Is it Under the Sea?
Under somewhere. No, that's Beyond the Sea. Beyond the Sea. No, it's Under the Lake, I think.
Under the Lake. That's it. Yeah. Okay.
So join us next week for our look at Under the Lake. Hopefully, it'll be a bit sooner after the airing of the episode. If you've enjoyed this one, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, watch us on YouTube, or just visit the website on thetimelash.wordpress.com, and all our previous episodes are available from there. Thanks again for listening, and we will speak to you soon. Bye.